Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Hello and welcome to another Arseblog Arsecast, right here on arseblog.oleole.com. Another week is over, and what a week it's been. It started terribly, and then it got better, to the point where it was reasonably good. In fact, it was more than reasonably good. It was beyond sufficient, I think you might say. We'll come to that in just a few moments' time, just to tell you what's on the show. I'll be talking to Tim Payton from the Arsenal Supporters Trust, just a little bit about the financial results that the club released, the implications of that, their impressions having met new CEO Ivan Gazidis, as well as that tickets and all that kind of stuff. So that's coming up in a little while. The man in the bar is here. Oh, is the man in the bar here? He'll be here. Yes. Yes, he'll be here. I don't have anything more to say about that at this moment in time, but yeah. As well as that, we'll have some news and some other bits and pieces as well. Plus, of course, all the football stuff and looking ahead to the fixtures on the way and looking back at what happened between the last Arsecast and this Arsecast. Now, last Arsecast, I think I remember saying something about how the game against Fulham was a must-win game. 3-0 draws on the trot. Well, that's just not very Arsenal. And Arsenal shouldn't, we couldn't make it 4. It was imperative that we won the game, not least because Aston Villa were looking like they were going to, you know, run away with things. So we had the game against Fulham, and we drew 0-0. And it was maddening, and I have to say, I was quite distressed. You know, I know in the overall scheme of things, I went out with Mrs. Bloggs that evening, went to the cinema, and we were driving along, and I was sort of driving and threatening to drive us into a wall and things like that. And she was going, you know, it's only a game. And I was going, it is, I know, only a game. And in the grand scheme of things, in this great world of ours where terrible things are happening to many people, you know, if you step back from it and you think, well, yes, it is, it's only a game. You know, but fuck that, though. 0-0 against Fulham at home? No, thank you very much. And in the first 15, 20 minutes, they could have scored about 3 or 4 goals. Of course, we had our chances as well. Van Persie hit the post. Van Persie had a header. Van Persie had a shot save. So most of our chances fell to Van Persie, in fairness. But 0-0. And it was upsetting and distressing and annoying because you looked at what was going to happen the next day because Aston Villa were playing Stoke. And you're thinking, oh, Jesus Christ, we're going to be right in the shit here. And the blog post I wrote on Sunday, I think, you know, I stand by that because, you know, 4-0 draws, even though it's part of a long unbeaten run, you can look at certain areas of the team and think, well, if that part of the team was better, then we probably wouldn't have drawn those games 0-0. And I'm talking about central midfield, of course, and I'm not blaming the players. I'm not blaming even the manager. I'm just saying that had we had a better central midfield, then I don't think we'd have had those 4-0 draws. But that's neither here nor there. So it was annoying. Sunday was quite depressing, and I sat up here in my lair. I sat up here and I watched Aston Villa against Stoke on Sunday on a stream, and I thought, well, maybe by watching Aston Villa I'll jinx them. Quite the reverse was the fact, I should say. Quite the reverse was true, in fact. What happened was I watched them and they scored 2 goals. And Stoke didn't score any goals. That's not to say Stoke didn't have some chances, because they did in that second half. They went at Aston Villa, had a few shots just wide and what have you. But anyway, with about 5 minutes to go, I said, right, well, that puts Aston Villa 8 points clear of us. And I think 8 points is too much for us to get back. So I went downstairs to get changed to play five-a-side. Got into my gear and my boots and what have you, and I was sitting downstairs, checking on Twitter. I think I was watching the end of the Carling Cup final, the Cunts Convention indeed. And I was sitting watching that, and I was checking on my phone, I was checking Twitter, and then I saw all these messages going, wow, can't believe the Stoke score. Ooh, Stoke, amazing. Thank you, Stoke. I was like, oh, I better check this. 2-2. So by not watching Aston Villa, I jinxed them. They dropped 2 points, which nobody, least of all me, expected them to drop. You don't go 2-0 up against Stoke until the 86th or the 88th minute. And, you know, let in 2 goals. You just don't. I mean, if you're going to have a bad result against Stoke, do what we did. Be shit all day, concede 1 goal, and then when you're trying to get one back, concede another. And then in the very last minute of injury time, get yourself a consolation. That's how to deal with Stoke in a negative fashion. These Aston Villa people don't know how to do it. So, 6 points is the gap. And then you're thinking, okay, this is getting a little bit interesting all of a sudden. My spirits were lifted after the misery of Sunday and after the misery of watching Aston Villa go 2-0 up and thinking these fuckers are going to go 8 points clear. All of a sudden it's 6 points. Then Arsenal have to go to West Brom and you're thinking, well, we haven't scored in 4 games. By the law of averages, we've got to score sooner or later, and we did score sooner. Rather than later, Nicholas Bentner opening the scoring after just a few minutes of the game. Hurrah, I thought. Brilliant. Then, of course, West Brom got one back. Almost straight away, a poor wall, I think you would have to admit, allowing the shot to go through and beat Almunia. But Kolo Touré scored from Arshavin's free kick, and Nicholas Bentner got himself another one from Kolo Touré's long pass to make it 3-1. And we had chances, I believe, in the second half to score more. I didn't see the second half. Nevertheless, 3 points, 3 goals, and now the gap between us and Aston Villa is 3 points. So what could have been 8 and possibly 5 by the time they played Man City, it's 3. So you're thinking, aha, now it's getting really interesting. So not learning my lesson from Sunday, I sat up here on Wednesday night and watched Aston Villa play Man City at Man City. Had I thought about that for a second, I probably would have reverse jinxed it and Villa would have won. But I forgot that I watched them on Sunday and they scored 2 goals. Manchester City won the game 2-0. So now we're only 3 points behind Villa. And they do have a run of reasonably difficult fixtures. I know I put it up on the blog today, but I think they've got Spurs, Liverpool. I can't quite remember I think Spurs, Liverpool, Man United, Everton, and then West Ham. So there's the potential, certainly, for them to drop points. And then we've got Blackburn, Newcastle, Man City, Wigan, and then Liverpool. So you would, in fairness, be looking for 12 points before you go and play Liverpool. And you're thinking, will Villa drop points against Liverpool? Possible. Against Spurs? Possible, I suppose. Against Man United? You would hope so. Against Everton and West Ham. So it's all looking a bit rosier, and that fourth place isn't looking quite so distant. That's not to say we don't still have our problems, because we do. They've been obvious all season long. Nevertheless, there really isn't much we can do about those problems between now and the end of the season. So if we can, I hate saying this, because we keep saying it, build on the last result and use this to build confidence to go forward. But, you know, we have to start winning games now. If we really want to get into that fourth position, it's back, not exactly in our hands, but it's not at the point where we're looking for an absolute miracle anymore, which it would have been had we been 8 points behind. So there you go. Things happen and things change very quickly. From miserable to quite upbeat. From down and out to right back in it. So there's plenty of football still to play. And as quickly as things can change for the better, they can also change for the worse. But let's take our positives where you can get them, and hopefully we can kick on from here. So there you go. So that's all the football that's happened between the last Arsecast and this Arsecast. We'll come to the football that's going to happen between this Arsecast and the next Arsecast in just a little while. As I said, still to come, the man in the bar will be along. But right now, to talk about things financial and to talk about things regarding tickets and to talk about our new CEO, Ivan Gazidis. Welcome back to the show, Tim Payton from the Arsenal Supporters Trust. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
Right, we'll start with the financial report which came out last week, and I think most people will be able to make sense of the figures, the increase in profit before tax, broadcasting revenues, etc., etc., but a lot of talk about the property market, the property side of things, and given the state of those markets, talk that the club is going to have to reschedule some of the loans involved. Can you explain a little bit more what that might mean?
Yeah, what that means is that the club no longer expect to receive all of the proceeds for property sales in order to pay off the loan by the scheduled date of April 2010. And that's down to the simple fact that people are no longer able to complete on the commitments they've made to buy flats. They are therefore having to go back to the banks that they have the arrangement with to see if they can reschedule those loans for longer than April 2010, as I think they expect a longer payment period from people. They are, as they say in their financial report, looking at perhaps options of people paying so much of the cost of the flats and refinancing arrangements with people. Perhaps they'll have to take in some rental income on some of the property as well. What they said in the annual report was the club have now fully funded the rebuilding of Highbury into Highbury Square. That means that they have all the money needed to finish all four stands and release the stands to sales, and there is £133 million left. So every flat that is sold comes off of £133 million outstanding, but they are clearly having, because of the property market, major issues in seeing through all of those sales, including to one or two large investors who, it was reported in The Guardian, include one Singaporean investor who has a large number of units. If we look at what that means perhaps for the club, I think it means that at one point we could see a very potential large upside from the property development, in effect a bonus for profit made from the development coming in. I think if there is to be a profit, it will be much smaller and it will be much, much longer in coming through to the club. But the other, perhaps more reassuring point in this is that the property is a ring-fenced business from the club, and therefore if it reaches the stage where it's not making any profit at all and it is becoming a cost, the club do have the option of, in effect, leaving that loss with the banks and with the property development. It is separate from the football club. So there is, if you like, a basement or a bottom line to offer some protection. But clearly, not the rosy-looking picture of a couple of years ago, although I think none of us had the hindsight to see what was going to happen to the property market.
Well, this is very true, and I suppose people will be reassured by the fact that, this isn't going to affect things from the football point of view. Or if things do go bad, they can write it off, more or less.
I think it might affect in some ways. There is the issue of how much time is this taking up of the senior management team at Arsenal working on, a property business as opposed to concentrating on the football business. Now, we would look for some reassurance that that's not too much time, because it may be worth saying, well, let's let that area go now. We accept there's no profit from it, but we also accept that there's, in effect, going to be no loss or no cost. And we must forget that, moving to the Emirates has still facilitated a much bigger income stream. And the money that pays the wage bill that we have at the moment, albeit whether or not that wage bill is performing on the pitch. So I think that at the edges it can have some impact, but your listeners should be reassured that it's certainly not in any way got the potential to bring the club down or have any major damage. It's a bit of a shame that perhaps the one-off lump sum that we thought might buy a couple of star names probably isn't going to be there either.
All right. Okay. Well, I suppose something that is of more pressing concern to people is the state of the club in the league at the moment, and this battle for fourth place in Champions League football next year. We know that the club have said on numerous occasions that they've budgeted or planned for life without Champions League football. But with this property thing, with the amount of money that we do spend on wages, the loss of that income would be considerable and have some serious implications, I'm sure.
The loss of income that you would predict from not being in the Champions League, and I think the associated issue of just selling the higher level tickets in club level without, an exciting season to back off would probably be in the region of 40 million. Now, if you look at our income stream at the moment and our costs, that would mean a very difficult year, some very tough decisions on the cost base, the wages, the running of the stadium, the running of the club, and or whether or not you would have to secure, you know, player sales to substitute for that gap. So, yeah, very difficult times, and one that I'm sure is occupying the new chief executive thinking. He'll probably be almost in his mind running two budgets now, a Champions League budget and a non-Champions League budget at the club.
You mentioned tickets. The club have announced that ticket prices are going to be frozen for the season ahead, or for next season rather, which I suppose is great news for fans, for season ticket holders, and for those who buy the tickets through the membership schemes. But there is, I suppose, the implications. Again, we come back to that Champions League thing, that without Champions League football, it's going to be more difficult, particularly to sell those expensive tickets and the corporate tickets.
Well, it is. And, you know, for instance, one question you have to ask, I think I know what my answer would be, is UEFA Cup or Europa League or whatever it's going to be called, is that a Category A match or a Category B match? If it's Category B, as I think your little laugh there indicated, but each Category B match rather than Category A is about £1 million difference in revenue per match. Now, the difficulty that Ivan Gazidis has is that Theo Walcott and Robin Van Persie would like a couple of million each in their new contract renewals. These are the things that need weighing up. At the same time, I do think the club are sensitive to the fact that a lot of their, you know, real supporters are going to struggle through no fault of their own other than the economic situation to afford the season ticket renewal. So, you know, these are, you know, it is in a way, you know, doubly unfortunate for us that our, you know, one bad season in 12 is overlapping, you know, with this terrible economic climate.
And the club are mindful, I think, of people's difficulties in this current financial climate when it comes to tickets, and you're talking about the Burnley FA Cup game.
That's right. What they've done for the first time is given people the opportunity to opt out of having their extra cup tie credit added to the season ticket. So normally season ticket holders would have to pay for the Burnley game, but the club did email everyone and give them the chance to opt out of that. I think that's, you know, a move that shows that they understand the issue that people have. You know, it's also a move that at one level is potentially giving them a bit less revenue, but they have to see overall the long-term health of the club is sure about making sure that fans can continue to afford.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Go and watch their team, including afford the season ticket renewal. I'll also just give them a small plug for the other thing that they confirmed to the Arsenal Supporters Trust yesterday, Andrew, which is that prices being frozen next year will actually see a reduction because we'll be paying 2.5% VAT less. So they've passed on the VAT saving rather than kind of added that in and clawed back an extra 2.5%. So I think they are, you know, they are doing a certain amount, but we wait to see what people are able to do on the 1st of June.
All right. Ivan Gazidis has been in the job now for just over 2 months. I'm sure you've had some dealings with him. And what are your impressions of him?
First impressions are positive. He seems to be a listener. He seems to already have imbibed the traditions of the club. I think we published a book at the end of last year called Custodianship at Arsenal, which in many ways replicated the views that the Trust have of how we'd like the club to be run. I've been quite encouraged, perhaps he's trying to butter us up, that in every interview he's done so far he's used the word custodianship and acting in the long-term future of the club. I certainly know he's meeting supporters, I certainly know he's listening, and first impressions are encouraging. I do think, you know, also he's sort of landed himself in a baptism of fire a little, hasn't he? Performances on the pitch, the recession as we're going, you know, I'm sure it would have been, manna from heaven to arrive in the invincible season, but, you know, he's going to earn his money this year.
How long is it going to take for us to see his influence over things, do you think? Because obviously, like you say, he's firefighting at the moment almost because of everything that's going on off the pitch and on the pitch. Do you think he's a guy that is going to influence the way the club works in the future?
I think he will. I think we've already seen that. From the conversation I had with him, I got the sense that the decision on the opt-out on the Burnley ticket, the price freeze and the VAT coming through. He was doing some testing of other views on ticket prices and making sure supporters could afford to get in. So I think we're already seeing his imprint. I think we'll see someone who, a mixture of his American sports background, will be increasingly supporter-focused, want to work with supporter groups and understand what we're looking for. So I think the early signs are good. But what he can't do, he can now do nothing between now and the end of the season, can he, to just claw us up to that fourth place? But he must have the fingers crossed more than anyone else.
maybe we all keep our fingers crossed it might just happen. All right, Tim, we better leave it there. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks as always to Tim Payton from the Arsenal Supporters Trust for his time. Lots of interesting stuff in there. And don't forget, you can check out their website, www.arsenaltrust.org. Lots of interesting stuff on the website. You can find out what it is exactly they do and how you can join and help out. Now, before we go any further, I really don't know what to say or how to introduce this.
Following the incredible success of his debut live performance outside the Chipper last week when he did an impromptu rendition of Bourgeois Tag's I Don't Mind At All, Arseblog Records is proud to announce the debut album from The Man in the Bar, entitled Songs About Arsenal Players, using songs that have already been written by someone else and just changing some of the words about a bit. Features all your favourite Arsenal players with timeless classic melodies. There's the incredible Eboué.
There was something in the air that night that made you shine, Eboué. They were shining down from Highbury. You hurt your knee, Eboué. Though I never thought that you'd be booed, there's no regret.
That have lived long in the memory and now will live even longer.
Samir Nasri's talking at me. I can't hear a word he's saying. Cause I've got my iPod in. Yeah.
Featuring stunning vocal performances such as Your Song.
If my name was Arsene, or then again, yes, a man whose first team is in a bit of a mess. I know it's not much, but it's the best I can do. My gift is this song, and this one's for you. And you can tell everybody your Alex song.
You come on, come on.
It's not your fault that you play like a mom. I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in words how short our midfield is. Now you're in the world.
as well as uplifting Dance Around the Kitchen, Get Your Handbags Out, Ladies disco numbers.
Robin Van Persie, he has got a dodgy knee, but when he's fit, he scores goal at a mont. Robin Van Persie, Arsenal's greatest goal machine, and he thinks that John Terry's a cunt.
Such a cunt.
Songs about Arsenal players using songs that have already been written by someone else and just changing some of the words about a bit is only available through Arseblog. To order, send a stamped addressed envelope containing £100, dollars, euros or other suitable currency to 7 Dublin. Please allow 28 years for delivery.
Nick can be your hero, Colo. I can take away the pain. Though your arson is so huge now, you can take my breath away. Now we'll be your hero, Colo. I can take away the pain. Though your arson is so huge. Can't take my breath away. You can't take my breath away. There goes my breath.
Well, I suppose the next time we see the man in the bar, it's going to be at the Grammys. Going to be up there collecting his awards. He'll have gone from the bar, the end of the bar, with a pint in front of him, to the rock and roll lifestyle. Champagne and hot chicks. Staying in the Beverly Hills Hotel, wandering down Wilshire Boulevard, buying things just because he has the money to buy them. Hanging out with all the cool guys in town. Yeah, you going to the party? Yeah, who's going to be there? The man in the bar is going to be there, along with Kenny G and Michael Bolton. Oh, I'm there, you could not keep me away. Some people just get success so easy, don't they? I've just finished watching the Arsenal Kids. The Arsenal youths playing Spurs in the FA Youth Cup at White Hart Lane. It was 1-1 right up until about the last, 2 minutes. And J. Emmanuel Thomas scored a fantastic goal to make it 2-1. And then Rhys Murphy for Ireland. I'd start being interested in Ireland again if we had Rhys Murphy playing for us. And you can't tell me there's not a bit of Irishness in Rhys Murphy. He's sort of Welsh and Irish put together. I don't know, that normally makes some mutants. But he seems to be all right. He scored the goal to make it 3-1. Steve Bold's team are through to the semi-finals. Go the kids. Like the kids, not the actual kids that play in the team, the first team, the real kids. Well, that's fantastic. A win over Spurs at any stage is always good. And an Arsenal team that scored 3 goals. Again. What's going on with all the goals?
There were mixed emotions at Arsenal last night as the club scored their first goal in competitive football for 942 hours. While many fans celebrated wildly, others were so shocked by what they'd seen they dropped dead there and then on the terraces. According to chairman Peter Hill-Wood,
"It's not nice, but there are worse ways to go."
Like former Arsenal director Sir Clarence Minge, who was face-raped by a gang led by Dixie Dean.
So goals back on the agenda, and let's hope we get a few under our belts on Sunday, which is when our FA Cup game is against Burnley in the 5th round. It's a replay. Arsene Wenger not too happy that the game is actually happening on Sunday. He asked to play on Saturday. Obviously, we've got the Champions League game against Roma coming up, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But he wasn't terribly happy that we had to play on the Sunday, but it's not the FA's fault, apparently. It's to do with the TV companies. They've spent all the money and they decide when the games are going to be on. So it would be nice if we had played on the Saturday, but, you know, what can you do? We just have to get on with it. There's not much we can do about it. We don't know yet about Kolo Touré. He picked up an injury against West Brom. William Gallas is back. Adebayor is out. However, Theo Walcott and Eduardo could be back. Arsene Wenger says, I will see how they look tomorrow and Saturday, but they'll certainly be in the squad, especially Theo. Especially Theo. Fantastic. It'll be good to have him back as well, and adding something to our attacking options. Fabianski will be in goal, but apart from that, there's not a huge amount of rotating that we can do. Maybe Sanya might get a rest and Aboué could play at right back and Arshavin can play because he can't play in the midweek game against Roma, obviously because he's cup-tied for the Champions League. But it's Burnley, and we kind of owe Burnley one because they knocked us out of the Carling Cup, and fair play to them on the night they deserved it. But the FA Cup, I suppose, still represents our most realistic chance of silverware this season. So even though we've got the game against Roma on Wednesday, I think we'll be going for this one not quite hell for leather, but we won't be taking this lightly by any means. So hopefully a good game. Then, of course, Roma. We take a one-goal lead to the Olympic Stadium in Rome, and, anything can happen in European football, but Roma could be without Totti. They say that now, actually, but he's probably fine. There's all these stories. Roma could be without Totti, and we're supposed to think, ha-ha, they've got no Totti then. Yeah, all right, well, this is going to be easy. However, Totti, every time he's played us, hasn't been particularly good. De Rossi is out, having picked up a yellow card in the first leg, and I think he'll be a bigger miss than Totti. One goal for us, of course, away from home means Roma would have to score three. And, I don't know. I don't know what to think about that game. I think we can score, definitely. And I don't really see us letting in three. So, that'd take us through to the quarterfinals? Yeah, quarterfinals of the Champions League, and then who knows where we'd end up or who we might be playing. All the other ties are really, really tight, apart from the Bayern Sporting tie. Bayern have 5 away goals. So it's kind of hard to see them not going through. All the rest of the games are up in the air, though. So fingers crossed we can do the business out in Rome on Wednesday night. It's going to be exciting, and one of those European ties. We have a good record, against Italian sides in general, so who can forget last year in the San Siro against Milan or Juventus at home when Fabregas wrestled the mantle from Vieira. Vieira then playing for Juventus. That was good times. And we've just generally done quite well against Italian sides in the Champions League, so let's hope we can keep it up. So, that's about it, I suppose. I should go, really, shouldn't I? Because there isn't much else worth talking about. We've got FA Cup Sunday, Champions League Wednesday, then we've got League on Saturday, and all the games are coming thick and fast. Bring them on. Momentum, that's all we need, momentum. So here's to a series of good results. Until next week's Arsecast, you have yourselves a very good weekend. I'll talk to you all weekend on the blog, of course, and all next week, and of course, indeed, indubitably, on next week's Arsecast. Ciao.
Okay, man in the bar, I'm going to go outside for a smoke. You can rejig your vocal cords ahead of the next take. Rock on there, matey.
Oh, you know what? This rock and roll thing, this is great, Craig, all together, sitting in the studio, singing songs, doing all the good stuff that rock and rollers do. Well, yeah, go on there, Slash. Lash, is there another line of that cocaine? Hang on. What's that? Oh. Oh, Jesus, that's good stuff. I can't feel the whole right hand side of me face, yeah. What's that, Jack White? Yeah, yeah, you're right, that was brilliant. Tell your sister I said hello, by the way. She's quite the looker. I do like them, chunky and what have you. Look, no offence, man. I just meant, she is, in fairness. You can't say she's not, sir. Yeah. Look, we're cool. Have another one of these. Go on, Slash, give him one of those there. I'll have one myself. Oh, and Mark King from level 42. I thought you were going to be an awful cunt altogether with your slappity-slappy bass, but you've toned it down. Well done, well done. I think we've got the making of a really great band here. Right, and I tell you about my concept album. It's about this fella, right? He becomes a turtle. Except nobody else can see the fact that he's become a turtle. So he's the only one who knows he's the turtle. To everyone else, he just looks like a normal bloke, right? What? What do you mean? Well, that's stupid. Well, then, no. Of course he becomes a turtle. Just because no one else sees it doesn't mean he's not a turtle. Anyway, he goes off on this adventure in a magical forest. And he meets a girl who's also become a turtle. Except nobody but her can see the fact that she's become a turtle. And they fall in love and have turtle kids which look exactly like humans. But the kids know that they're turtle kids. And, oh, it's great. I haven't quite figured out how it's going to end anyway. Yeah. What are we doing now? He's kind of worry. Whose turn is it to ring Bono up and call him a short-arsed little cunt? Oh, it's mine, is it? Give us that phone there.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.